Hello and welcome to the Saturday Night Roundtable Discussion. I'm Dana Hawking, here with Wayne Houchin.
What's going on?
You have been submitting questions, we have been reading, I have picked the top 10, Wayne Houchin will now answer, we're gonna go, check it out. The first one comes to us, what, too fast? The first one comes to us from J. Robart, Roboto 05, something like that. What is your most prized possession in Magic?
Most prized possession. I would have to definitely say that my most prized possession in Magic is a keychain, a Sacramento keychain that was given to me by Daniel Garcia as a gift. He actually bought it in Sacramento, which is where I was when I picked him up from the airport. He bought it at the gift shop there at the airport in Sacramento where I was that he gave to me. And I now have it framed. He's very thoughtful. But no, I would have to say, honestly, it's my collection of books. My library is by far my most prized possession. And it's kind of ironic, but I learn Magic better from books than I do from DVDs. I love DVDs because it allows you the opportunity to see the end result of what the effect and what the Magic is supposed to be, what it's supposed to look like. That's also damn entertaining. Mm-hmm. But for books, when there's something about reading a description of an effect and working it out, working through it, that forces me to kind of internalize it more. And so I take very good care of my books. I have a lot of books.
That's true. By good care, Wayne means that if you touch them ever, he will kill you.
You...
Okay.
Okay, well, whatever, fine. But yes, no, I have a ton of books, and some of them you can't get anymore, and I'm very proud of them. And, you know, they're books filled with secrets, and there's something that's very... very sexy about that idea, and my collection is continuing to grow thanks to Steve Johnson at Grand Illusions. So thanks, Steve.
Thank you, Steve. Throughout your entire experience with Magic, has there ever been a time when you felt like you wanted to move on or try another profession? That comes from Magic Man 123 dash an extra 2 for some reason.
Was there a time when I felt like I wanted to try another profession? Absolutely. My dad taught me when I was younger that success often comes right after your biggest failure. And it's the people who are able to pick themselves up time and time again that eventually succeed. And so I think I got pretty successful in Magic pretty early on in high school with what I was doing with my theater show and the Magic that I was creating back then and some of my publicity stunts. And after I got out of high school, there I kind of entered this period where I was in college and I was still doing Magic, but I wasn't making much money. And I really got down, and there was a couple year period where I was seriously starting to move on, and I was looking at doing something that I've always wanted to do since I was a kid, was join the army. That's something that if I wasn't doing Magic, I would probably be in the army. I can't tell you how much respect I have for the men and the women out there who support our country and do what they do. But, you know, I kept picking myself up, and even though things didn't seem like they were going well, I was continuing to learn and continuing to grow as a performer and as a creator, and eventually that's what led to me being where I'm at today, and I'm very fortunate for that. But sure, I mean, I think anybody who has achieved anything in their life has had doubts and has had, you know, long stretches of time where it seems like what they're doing is, you know, the wrong thing. I know plenty of people who are successful today who have had that same issue. So, but again, it's just about picking yourself up and staying confident and believing in yourself and doing everything you can. One of the other things I want to mention here too is one of the things that my dad taught me when I was younger is that if you pay attention to what you're doing. So let's say I have a specific goal. My goal was to be a great performer, to be a great creator. If I'm trying to reach that goal and I pay attention to every step that I'm taking along my path to that goal and the different things that I do that get me further away from that goal, if I stop doing those and continue to do the things that get me closer to my goal, eventually I will achieve my goal. It's almost impossible for me not to. It may take a long time. It may take decades. But if you pay very close attention to what it is that you're doing and adjust your strategy accordingly, it's almost impossible for you to fail in the long run.
All right, here's a good one from Phil the Magician. Seeing as how he's not around, how is Daniel Garcia really?
Daniel Garcia really? Actually, I mean, in all honesty, Daniel Garcia is great.
He's a jerk.
Dana says he's a jerk. No, he's...
I love you, Danny.
Danny is one of the most talented people I've ever met, honestly. He's a great creator. He's a great performer. But not only that, what really impresses me about Danny, what impresses a lot of people about Danny is how down-to-earth he is. He's just a good guy. His whole crew out in Texas, all of them, they're just good people, and they're the kind of people who, you know, if you were in a bad spot or if you were in trouble or if you just, you know, needed anything at all, they would jump in, no questions asked, and it's just a real good group of guys.
All right, how long did it take you to find your performance style? Thank you, Stoneface, for that one.
Performance style, that's something that I haven't found, and that's something that is evolving. It has evolved, and it will continue to evolve for a long time. When I started doing magic, I had a very kind of Copperfield persona, believe it or not. Actually,
that's true.
I did. I had a couple routines where I even danced around to choreographed music or a choreographed routine to music on stage during some of my early theater shows when I was like 16.
Which was actually really good. Just funny to watch Wayne do
it now. It is funny to watch. But no, I mean, I realized back then that I didn't enjoy doing that because I wasn't directly interacting with the audience. There's something about speaking to the audience and listening to what they have to say and feeding off of their energy. That's what makes a performance fun for me. So I realized very early on that doing something choreographed to music didn't really fit my personality. I had to be able to speak. So from there, I geared all of my presentations and performances to wrap around this idea that the show is not necessarily about magic. It's not necessarily about the magic that I'm performing on stage. It's more about the relationship that I build with my audience on stage during that period of time. And sure, some magic happens and some comedy happens, but each show is different because my relationship with that audience for that particular evening is going to be very different than from another evening. And, you know, I've noticed just recently within the last year, my performance style has started to evolve even more. And at this point, I know it's changing because I'm starting to do things very differently than how I used to do them a couple years ago. And I'm not really sure where it's going. But I don't know, there's something fun and exciting about your, you know, developing your performance style and being consciously aware that it's starting to evolve and trying to figure out why, trying to figure out what it is about a particular performance style that really resonates with you and with your audience, and then trying to feed off that and help it along. That's something that I think is going to continue for the rest of my life, for sure.
Josh Destroys, which is an awesome name, by the way. Go, Josh.
says, I saw your act at the Magic Castle twice while you were there. Did you enjoy performing in the parlor setting?
Josh Destroys, Magic Castle. Yes, I loved performing at the Magic Castle. I cannot wait to get back there. I heard a lot of things about the castle going out there, some good, some bad, and I cannot tell you what a wonderful experience I had. Max Maven, who's taking care of all the performers and the entertainment director and all that out there, just he really did a phenomenal job. Everybody, John Armstrong was great. There were so many great people out there who took care of me. Aaron Fisher. I mean, it just really is a great group of guys. It's a great setting. You know, I absolutely love the fact that every night, you know, because it's a lot of shows. You're doing 3 shows a night for 7 days a week, so that's 21 shows. And it's a real opportunity to work on your act, which is phenomenal. And the parlor is, it's kind of the middle theater. There, you know, you've got the close-up room where I don't know how many people that seats exactly, maybe 20 people or so, but it's really geared towards the close-up magic. And you've got the parlor, which seats maybe 50 to 60. It's more of a parlor act. It's a stand-up act, which is what my act is. And so it was so great being in that room. And every night, the audiences that would come in, they were, you know, dressed nicely because there's a very strict dress code. They were there specifically to see magic. So it was just such a wonderful experience, and like I said, 21 shows, this was a great opportunity to work on my act and to try out some new things and really kind of pay attention to how the audience responded to some of the different things that I was trying out, so it was a lot of fun.
Very cool. Squirrel Magic asks, if someone was to ask you for advice on something such as reacting to someone putting them down, what would you give? So if someone's putting you down, what advice would you give people?
Punch
them in the face.
That's, no. if someone's putting you down, what advice would I give? That's a really good question because it happens to everybody. Actually, this is a true story. I remember I was in eighth grade. No? Yeah, I was just finishing up eighth grade. I was having my physical to go into my freshman year in high school. And I think I was... Right. I think I was trying out for sports or something like that. So I had the school required me to go get a physical. And I was talking to the doctor, and he was talking to me about getting into high school. And he asked what I wanted to do, if I had any idea what I wanted to do when I got out of high school. And I told him that I was a magician, and that's what I wanted to do. And he looked at me and he said, "Yeah, but what are you going to do to make money? Because you can't make money doing that." Dead serious. And my mom was sitting right there, So I know what that feels like, to have people put you down and to look down upon you. And there was a time in my life where I was embarrassed to tell people that I did magic. Now I'm proud, because I have a very large truck. But no, my parents have always been very supportive. I guess the best advice that I can give you if someone's putting you down is to recognize and realize that when someone's putting you down, it has nothing to do with you. It has to do with them. People will put you down because they don't feel good about themselves, because they feel threatened by something that you're doing, because, for a lot of different reasons. But people, you can't expect other people to be able to fully see and understand your vision. And there's some really great advice that I just heard. This guy put together this report on how to be creative. And one of the things he talks about in there, in that report, is that if you're a creative person and you're trying to do creative things, you cannot rely on the advice or opinions of others. Because that's, if everybody saw your vision, you wouldn't be unique. You wouldn't be creating anything unique. So you can't put too much weight in other people's opinions of your creative work. You need to have faith in yourself, trust yourself, and trust your own judgment. But at the same time, you have to be really honest with yourself. You have to be able to look at a particular performance that you did and honestly say, that was a horrible performance. I did a really bad job. Why did I do a bad job? And I do that all the time. I actually just did a horrible performance. Swear to God, it was Thursday night, just this couple days ago, a couple nights ago. I did the high school that I graduated from, Pleasant Valley High School here in Chico. They had a grad night, one of those all night sober grad parties, and I performed at 1 o'clock in the morning, and I bombed. I mean, I did okay for the first 10 minutes or so, but I did about a 45-minute act, and the problem is that what I was trying to present to them was a little bit too small for them to see. The sound system wasn't that great. The sound system was actually coming through the entire room speakers, if that makes sense. So like the speakers up above on the ceilings. So my voice was kind of pushed out through the entire room instead of being centered and focused and coming directly from where I was standing. And on top of that, it was late. It was so late. And the type of magic that I was presenting was a bit too intellectual for a bunch of teenagers at 1 o'clock in the morning. I was asking too much of them, for them to pay attention. And the show, I mean, it was just boring. I was very boring, and I have it all on videotape, and I videotape as many of my performances as I can so that I can go back and watch it. But again, like I said, you have to be honest with yourself. I have to be able to sit down and look at that video and be honest and be able to admit and say, that was a really bad show. I did a really bad job as an entertainer. What do I have to do now to fix it to make sure that that doesn't happen again? And that's how you grow and develop as a performer. And I think a lot of performers are afraid to look at themselves on video. They're afraid to be honest with themselves. And therefore, when they do get criticized from someone else, from an outside source, I think people take it a little bit too much to heart because they're afraid to criticize themselves, period. So maybe some of you might think to yourselves, well, you know, maybe he's right. Maybe I am pretty bad. Instead of having that kind of being grounded in that honesty of yourself and being able to honestly criticize yourself. Because at the same time, I also know when I do a really good show. And if someone's going to criticize a really good show that I did, and I'm pretty confident I did a really good show, I can be pretty confident that, you know, there's some other motivations behind the criticism of me. So that was kind of a long-winded answer, and I think it kind of makes sense, and I think I kind of skip around, but good luck deciphering that one.
Yeah, have fun, guys. All right, so this one is just for me personally. This comes from JPD. I just want to know what your answer is to this question.
Okay.
Wayne, what would it be like if you and Dana switched? You're the camera guy, and I'm the magician.
What would it, so what would it be like if I videotaped Dana doing magic?
Yeah.
All right. Well, the camera work would be impeccable. It would be phenomenal, first off, I must say. And I guess second, if when you took the finished DVD and put it in the, into your DVD player and press play and you're watching it on TV, I must say, with Dana doing the magic, your TV set would be a lot more ugly.
I mean, thanks. That's probably true, though.
You know, we should try. Dana, the next DVD that I do, I'm just going to have you do it all, and I'm just going to film you.
That's fine. Actually, funny story, we Wayne and I became friends in high school, and we started doing magic together, and when it began, we just would go downtown and take a camera, and I would film Wayne, and then he'd film me, and we'd do magic for people or for friends or whatever. And eventually we found out that Wayne was way better at it and should be on camera, and I should be behind the camera where my ugly face cannot be seen, apparently.
Yeah, it was...
Thanks, Wayne.
Well, that was weird, because that was an interesting time, too, because I was doing a lot of theater shows at that time and got a camera and found out that Dana was interested in magic, too. So we were just... I remember one day we were just like, you know what, let's go downtown and film some magic. Because I did a lot of busking, and I do a lot of busking down at what's called the Thursday Night Market. And so Dana brought the camera out and filmed my act, and you know, we just started filming each other. That was actually a really interesting experience too, because again, you're playing with that whole concept of really paying attention to what you're doing during a performance, what works and what doesn't work. And I just remember that whole time was really interesting, because that was the first time I'd seen myself on video, over and over and over and over again, and had the opportunity to really kind of judge what I was doing as much as I did.
Our last question comes to us from Snoopy123. Snoopy! The material you create has a very high impact on spectators, yet little is based on the technical side. How do you create such material that is performance-based?
That is a good question.
Let's hear the secret.
Well, I think for me, as I kind of mentioned earlier, magic in my performance is not about necessarily the magic that I'm doing. It's about the relationship that I create, and the experiences that the audience and I experience together within that relationship. So for me, when I create, or when I'm working on an idea, or I get an idea and I want to create a particular kind of illusion, I will often look for the easiest way to do it. If I can find an easy way to do it without compromising the integrity of the effect or what it is, you know, my vision for it, obviously that's the way that I want to go, because that gives me more room to really concentrate on the performance and to concentrate on that relationship. Yeah. I mean, a lot of people misunderstand this, but you have to understand that magicians are the only ones that care about how technically difficult a trick is. Laymen can't tell the difference. They really can't tell the difference, and they don't care. And it's, you know, I see a lot of younger performers who will sacrifice the integrity of an effect or the purity of an effect just so they can do it in a technically more difficult way. And that's something that I've never done. It's just been counterintuitive to me. If I want to create the illusion of, you know, two cards switching places, why go through all this technical stuff that kind of muddles up the effect when I can just use a duplicate and have this super clean transposition between two cards? It just makes more sense to me. But I know that there are a lot of people who disagree with me. I'm sure Joel Pascal right now is cringing. That man is a purist. But see, Joel has this thing about him where he can pull it off. I mean, Joel has really been able to explore that line and find that line where he can take an effect like, let's say, a transposition, and be able to do it in a pure fashion with no duplicates, while maintaining the integrity of the effect and the purity of the effect and the cleanliness of it. And that's something that a lot of magicians can't do. Again, for me, it's all about that relationship, and that's always what I'm thinking about. It's never, I never think about what's the coolest way to do this trick, or, you know, what's the coolest move that I can throw in here. I'm always thinking about, what am I going to be saying on stage while I'm doing this? How is my audience going to be reacting to what they're seeing and what I'm saying? How am I going to be able to feed off of that energy? And anything that gets in the way of that, or makes me feeding off of their energy, or makes me experiencing that moment with them harder, that's something that I'm going to cut out of that particular routine, and it's something that I'm going to attempt to trim away. So I think that's it. It's all about that end result, that end goal of the experience with my audience being as pure and as clean as possible. And so I definitely want the hard-hitting type of effects that can be described in a sentence or less, but something that's not going to be so ridiculously technically difficult that it A, makes it hard for me to perform, or B, convolutes the effect and makes it just messier than it needs to be. So, but very good question. I've been impressed by all of your guys' questions. I'd love to be able to sit down, because I could talk for hours on this stuff, as you can probably tell. I'm a bit long-winded in some of these answers, but no, all very, very good questions, and there were definitely a lot more questions that I didn't answer that I really would have liked to. But congratulations to everyone who quote-unquote won. You guys have a free one-on-one on the house. You'll be hearing soon from either Raker or Bryant or possibly someone else from our Theory 11 crew. So I don't know.
Just somebody gonna contact you,
right? So yeah, check your inbox. You'll get some information pretty soon about it. As I said, one on one on the house. But anyway, thank you all guys all very much. And Dana, thank you for picking out all the questions.
Thank you for divulging all your secrets.
Right, that was awesome. Anyway, yeah. Thank you guys very much. It's been a pleasure. I hope you guys enjoyed it, and we'll talk to you soon. Take care.